Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy and producer extraordinaire and brother in Dark Souls, Cameron McCoy. You've been reeled in.
I'm feeling it. Like, I mean, 10 years too late, you know? Like, I'm glad I've checked it out now, but dude, I am a disciple of this. I'm going to just be spreading the good word of Dark Souls. Have you played this game? Because it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, we are the captains of being late to the party. And our pre-show is entirely devoted to Dark Souls. So if you haven't checked it out, hey.
Now's the time.
Now's the time. Now's the time. You probably get on deep discount. Anyway, Cameron, we're also a Magic the Gathering podcast. And we've reached one of those lovely episodes where my week professionally was completely insane. I'm a robotics coach. This was the week of our state tournament. So that was like my evenings, my weekend, the works. So we're leaning hard on you, buddy.
Mm.
Tell me about what's going on in the world of Magic the Gathering with you. What have you been playing? Go.
Can I interest you in a suboptimal pioneer list that I've been playing this week, right?
So, okay, my understanding of the format is everything that's not inverter is suboptimal. Is that true?
that's probably true. Like right now, blue-white control seems suboptimal. Just based off of all the cards that I have in MTGO without investing in anything, I am just spending tickets right now, I built a blue-black control list in Pioneer. It's running Thoughtseize. Okay. It's running Fatal Pushes, Thought Erasures, Jace Vryn's Prodigy. Yeah, man. And then just like a good old who's who of like just random good cards, Heroes Downfall, can go on and on. So this is I love this style of control deck. It is a straight up blue-black control deck. You are like just constantly on the play, Thoughtseize, turn two, Thought Erasure. You're just stripping their hand and then waiting to get like a finisher, which I am using the new Ashiok as a finisher because it's actually fairly cheap.
It
works, right? So anyway, totally suboptimal. But things of note with this list, Fatal Push is incredibly good right now in the meta, like against like the mono red deck. Against the model white. I mean, like, there's just so many times where it's like, okay, this is now better than it was when there was so much recursion happening in the graveyard with Smuggler's Copter and, like, the mono black decks specifically. Thoughtseize is just, I mean, like, I feel like you should be playing it if you're going to be playing against a combo deck. Like, it's better to be proactive with a Thoughtseize rather than trying to counter something where they're going to have the mana to counter what you're doing, right? So I really like having like the turn 1-2 combo of Thoughtseize and Thought Erasure. But as much as I like playing this list, at the end of the day, if you're playing blue-black, you should just be playing Inverter right now. Like, I mean, like, it's there's like no other reason. Like, I mean, I should just invest in like this very specific cards that I would need, which are obviously going to be banned here in the next couple of weeks. But like if I were going to be playing this competitively, blue-black, like there's no reason to play anything else right now other than Inverter. So it really saddens me. Like the meta has settled down so much from like that first 3 weeks of Pioneer. So it's kind of a bummer. But at the same time, we're living in a world where like we have a really good format and it's not modern and it's not Legacy, you know, as much as I love Legacy, but it's like people are playing it. It's good. So, yeah, I guess that's conflicted feelings about Pioneer, but overall I feel like the future is bright with this format.
Can I ask you this? When's the last time you actually took a look? I don't even want you to click on anything, Cameron. I want no clicks. When's the last time you took a look at the modern metagame? And if I asked you, what is the top list on Goldfish right now? Would you have any clue?
I could tell you because there's been no noise. So it's got to be either Tron or Titan. Titan Shift or something like that, right?
Titan, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
like,
Titan.
Like, yeah. Wurza is probably what next, I would assume. Like, I haven't looked, but
it's gotten a lot worse since Opal's been banned, right?
Oh, sure, so, sure. Yeah, I forgot. I forgot.
Like, it's just yeah. You know, it's like, I'm trying to come up with a decent analogy here, but basically, modern was like this thing that we had that. You know, it's like whenever you have a car, like my wife's former car, and it just like had all these like little idiosyncrasies and you just dealt with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You were just used to it. And then when you got in something different, you're like, oh, this is how this is supposed to go. That is how the transition from modern to Pioneer has felt to me. Right. And again, Pioneer far from perfect, but modern is just like so far off the deep end in terms of, you know, these things. And I know sometimes we're, we'll say inconsistent with our opinions, right? Like,
sure,
this got brought
sure.
up on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I feel like we've been pretty consistent with our thoughts on modern, right?
Yeah. Is there any saving that format, dude? I mean, we're not alone. Like, a lot of people find it to be a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's just become redundant now that Pioneer exists. It's like, why would I play this format where it's one, you know, ramp deck versus a combo deck? Like, I don't know. Like, no interest.
Yeah, I'm really struggling with what I'm supposed to do with some of my moneyed modern cards. Because with Legacy, it took me probably longer than it should have to sell some of my Legacy cards because I love the format,
mm-hmm.
right? I love my Maverick deck, and getting rid of that was difficult, but I knew I wasn't playing it and I knew I wanted some really shallow consumer electronic items,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that was the best way to transition that. But like modern, there is no love loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have Grixis Death Shadow sitting right next to me as we speak. That is probably my favorite modern deck of all time, and I don't hate it, and I don't love it. I very much nothing it. You know?
It's a loveless relationship, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's the guy that lived across the hall in college. Like, very nice gentleman. I don't know. Right?
Yeah.
It's fine. You know, whenever you're paired in a group project in the government class. Okay, let's get this knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
The end. Right? But, you know, we're not going to talk to each other outside of this.
Especially right? Once you guys graduate and you move on to different careers in Pioneer. I mean, you know, you're looking at him through, like, distant glasses, right? Maybe
right.
A tinge of nostalgia? No, there's no nostalgia. But
yeah, it's just nothing, man. It's just nothing. And so, I mean, maybe I'll just keep Storm together, but it is a real difficult proposition to not just buy something silly and unnecessary for myself
mm-hmm.
with these modern cards because I'm not going to miss it. And, you know, Legacy, I'm still holding on to one Legacy deck, and I think I'll still play every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I honestly think there could be a modern tournament in the garage across the street, and I probably wouldn't go. So I'll just play Arena, guys. It's fine.
Yeah, it's great.
No, with Pioneer, I haven't really done much work with it because I know I wasn't going to be able to play it up until like probably next week I might be able to go kind
mm-hmm.
of thing. But I'm interested to jump back in. So you would suggest no on blue-white?
I mean, I think it's still, like, the default best control deck. It's just, like, it's not a good deck in terms of, like, what's happening in Pioneer right now. So, you know, take that with what it is. It's a fine deck. I think you're going to totally win some games and whatnot. I just feel like it's still not optimized, especially for what's happening with Inverter and a whole slew of other things that are, like, just outperforming it.
Okay, so what you're saying is get Delirium. Get some bug going.
Just
play all these.
Do it right
really
and do Delirium. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've got a Nishikana somewhere. I played Delirium in Standard. Let's make some spiders happen, you
yeah,
know?
Man.
No, I just think that's the kind of deck that I want to be good. It feels very Jund in the format. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I'll turn some modern cards into this deck and, you know, just have a little fun.
Wise.
Yeah. And then sell those cards to buy an Xbox here in October or whatever. All right, Cameron, so our new segment's actually going to be pretty short. We're going to spend most of it talking about this historic format and some of the cards that are coming into that. We'll be right back. This week, we'd like to thank a few of our patrons, Issa B. and Joshua Sims. Thank you guys so much for continuing to support the show. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click on the donate button. All right, Cameron. So before we get into the historic stuff, I do want to direct your attention to the page. How much judgment would I get from you if I bought this Thalia Beyond the Vault, Beyond the Hell Vault?
None. You should do it.
It's really cool, right? I'm not crazy for loving this.
Yeah.
Thalia and I, we've had some times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one day I'll rebuild Maverick and lose horribly to death and taxes now because they get all the tools and Maverick doesn't. But, man, what a cool little thing. I don't really like the Secret Lair stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I really wish that would go through my LGS. You know, where I built a relationship over a decade and gotten to know the owner and all these things and could pre-order and he could benefit. But no, instead I'm expected to, like a tennis shoe customer, like when like a sneakerhead, log onto this website that's almost certainly going to crash and hope that I can get in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Cameron, speaking of Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, she is one of the new historic anthology things that's coming out on March 12th. Now, this one, I would argue, has a lot to kind of chew on.
A lot.
Right? In terms of cards that it's going to add to historic. Like, wow, this is going to, I would argue, make it feel even quite a bit different than, like, separated not just from Standard, but also from Pioneer.
Way more,
And Thalia, Guardian of Thraben is in that discussion. And I think that within of itself makes white-based creature aggro, I mean, way better. Way better. So I'm interested in some cards that kind of stick out to you and what you're thinking in terms of how they'll impact the format.
I can't really make heads or tails of most of this because like I see certain things and I get very, very excited and my mind starts racing. I mean, we're seeing like modern and legacy staple cards, entering into historic and kind of intermingling with some of the newer cards that we've gotten that are currently in the format. So, I mean, you're getting really close, dude, to being able to get like some sort of Maverick light sort of deck with Knight of Reliquary, Thalia, Ghost Quarter. You know, and there's quite a few really good green cards that we have seen where you can like search for something if you need to and really create a toolbox around that. So there seems to be kind of pushing in that direction and it excites me whether or not it's actually better to be doing that versus, you know, green, red, smash you in the face with, you know, giant sword. Maybe that's the way you should be going, but there's a lot here, right? I mean, Meryl Reedry is another one that got me really excited. So, yeah, it's so weird. And I just continue to say that every single time I think and look at historic and what they're doing with this format where there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason. And that, as we have said in the past, is probably to its benefit. So sign me up. Like I'm really kind of strangely excited about this, these cards entering the format.
Yeah. So just to like, I just want to give you this exercise, Cameron. Just go to Scryfall or something and pull up Historic Anthology 1. And the card quality difference, like, look, there's some decent stuff here, but the difference is really noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get to your point, there is a lot of merfolk that are already kind of in Arena. But Mara Rejiri, I would argue, is one of the biggest pushes for that deck. It makes a huge, huge difference. But, and this is a big one, Merfolk is missing its essential tool that makes it a legacy and modern playable deck, and that's Aethervile.
Yep.
And so it's a strong tribal thing, but it's still, for lack of a better term, less meaty than what elves can do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you're kind of at this state where it's a little bit less than. And that's a little concerning. Elves can kind of, like, it's the classic kind of elf ball combo thing. Now, let's just point out a couple other ones. So Meddling Mage and Maelstrom Pulse have been, we'll call them role players, in their respective decks. Meddling Mage has, in its old past, was more of a control card, right? It was a control sideboard card or something like that. Well, now it's seeing more play in humans, or you think of it as more of a humans card. Maybe that's how I should say that. And I, you remember when Modern was slow, Cameron, back when humans would only kill you on turn four?
Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, and they would play this card. But let's, I'm a Maverick player, so I want to look at this from the Maverick angle, okay? Because this is what people tune into us for. Hot takes on incoming cards from a irrelevant legacy deck from 6 years
ago. Yeah, how do you recapture that magic, man?
Yeah, you can't get that anywhere else, guys. You can't get that. Spike Beat exclusive. So first of all, the headline act here is not Thalia, Guardian of Thraven. If you're a Maverick fan, it's your girl, Knight of the Reliquary.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Now, what is weird is there is an old blast from the past with this Terravor, which plays on that same axis of your ability to have cards in the graveyard. So you might not know because Terravor is old, but it's one green for a Lurgoyf. It's trample, and its power and toughness are equal to the number of land cards in all graveyards. Now, there is not a base power toughness like there is with Knight of the Reliquary, so you kind of are incentivized to get after it, we'll say, a little bit more. But that, along with Ghost Quarter, makes this a much more workable situation. There is also very strangely, like, cycling lands. So you have that, you have Fabled Passage, you have ways to make this go on outside of just Ghost Quarter. But they've added some of these Zendikar kind of toolbox lands, like Bajukabog. So now you've created your Knight of the Reliquary toolbox, which is strange, right?
Oh, man.
I'm just getting pumped just talking about this, Cameron, if you want me to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one that's kind of on the outside looking in, I would assume it is way more of a Soul Sisters card, is Ranger of Eos. But there have been moments where that sees kind of a green-white kind of aggro deck. But those are the cards that really stick out to me. There are some other strange ones here. Like Dragon Master Outcast has seen random control play from time to time.
Sign me up, man. I love that card.
Still one of my favorite pieces of magic art, yeah. Because it looks like the cover of a heavy metal album.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, like, just Dragon Master Outcast. I mean, like, great name. It's so, so flavorful.
Really, in an alternative universe, this is a Dio album. It is. That is the cover. The name of the album is Dragon Master Outcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, it's good. End. It's good.
Really, anytime you can, like, be the cover of a Dio, like, Dio album, like, I'm there. I'm in it, right? What do you want from me?
Maelstrom Pulse, man. Maelstrom Pulse. So excited. It's, I mean, like, talk about it, like, overpowered, like, so good. And so I hope we see that. I hope that sees play, I should say.
Yeah, so let's see. 4,000 gems. Dude, I'm terrible with my currency conversion. But that gets you a play set of all 25. And historic, not only is it interesting, it also feels like the kind of quasi-cost-controlled format that you can just buy into a deck. So if you're worried if anybody's going to test this whole Maverick thing out, I got you covered. I got Spring Break coming up. It happens after this occurs. Doom Eternal won't be out yet. I'm going to be so knee deep in playing Maverick. Just count on it, man. I'm ready. And the question is, how many Fauna Shamans will I play on that list, right? Like, because that's going to be like the Green Sun in the deck. Anyway, I'm kind of, I don't know, like this list got me a little bit more excited. It's a little more pushed. Mm-hmm. It's a little more direction I want to see with Historic. And I'm really interested to see where these Jumpstart cards kind of play into all of it, you know?
Yeah.
All right, Cameron, did you have anything else to add to this list before we go into our like super long second segment, or I should say third segment?
Nope. Brain is just turning right now. That's all. It's great. It's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to cut to break, and you and I are just going to like spontaneously start scribbling down deck lists, right?
Yeah. It's going to be great.
So, all right. Yeah, we'll be right back. All right, Cameron, some more Star Wars things going on. Mm-hmm. I have to be honest with you. I don't even know what this is because I've been so in my own little hobbit hole this week.
Right, yeah.
So, Star Wars news occurred, and I didn't know it, which is alarming on multiple levels. So
I'm
interested
to hear,
man. I'm
judging you very harshly right now. So,
yeah, I don't like living in a world where I'm too busy for Star Wars, to be honest with you, but here we are.
Don't blame you. So, yeah, man, like they just announced this Star Wars High Republic, which got me all sorts of like kind of excited. You know, the train wreck that was the Rise of Skywalker put a nice little, you know, bow on the end of the Skywalker trilogy or series, I should say. And what's next for Disney? What's next for Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. This seems to be one of the things that they're doing. So much in keeping with the Timothy Zahn books that came out in the early 90s, like Heir to the Empire, there was like Dark Apprentice. I don't know. They were the thing, right? As a Star Wars nerd who did not get his fix of... I mean, after your VHS copies had worn out, you needed new content, right? Like, Star Trek nerds got all the TNG they wanted. Star Wars nerds needed their books. And so, Timothy Zahn, right? Everybody's best friend.
To the rescue, man. Those books were cute. I couldn't tell you a single thing about the story of those books. But I know... Like, I even remember the cover, the first one. I wouldn't take off the dust jacket because I remember I love... for those of you who don't remember, like, the dust jacket is the paper that goes away. Okay. Anyway. Anyway, dude, I love that stuff. So,
Yeah, so anyway,
so
they made an announcement video showing that they're going to kind of do Star Wars 200 years before The Phantom Menace. So we're going to see the Jedi at the absolute height of what the Jedi are like. And it seems like a real soft reboot in some ways. Whole new, you know, universe really to kind of explore within the Star Wars universe. I mean, the sky's the limit for like what this is. And what got me excited is not only like are we going to get some, you know, new books by some very talented artists, which I'm very excited about, but this might lead to where they may go with the next trilogy of movies, which means they don't have to really feed off of that nostalgia the way that they really did with those earlier films. I'm sorry, with the most recent films. And I love those most recent films, but I mean, we're very much stuck and entrenched in like the Skywalker lore, right? So something new, something kind of like Knights of the Old Republic, sign me up. Like, I am super excited about this. So, I mean, they didn't really show a lot, you know, but the video totally brought about something exciting inside of me as far as just like, I'm ready for something new. I'm ready for more Star Wars content. Let's meld the two things together, right? So... I'm excited.
Cool, man. I will watch the video. Rise of the Skywalker has had the exact opposite impact that Rogue One had on me. Like, if you were to ask me when I walked out of both of those movies, I bet I would have had the same kind of level of enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the further away I get, the more I love Rogue One, and the more I'm just annoyed at Rise of the Skywalker.
Yeah.
And I feel like we did our review several days after it, and I got really annoyed about these things. And the more I stew on it, the more it just bugs me,
mm-hmm.
you know, that some of these things, and that they didn't take their time with it and all these, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's whatever. It was also kind of highlighted by the fact that Jedi Fallen Order has a better story, like the video game has the better story than the movie that came out. Which I don't know if you've ever gotten to that, Cameron, but...
I haven't yet, now after Dark Souls, maybe I will.
Yeah. That's going to be the problem, is it's a very good game, but it's trying to be Dark Souls, and you're playing Dark Souls right now.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like, hey, I hear you like this Ferrari. How would you feel about a 10-year-old Cadillac? It's a good Cadillac. It's a good car. No one has a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's quite the come down. I do want to just very, very, very quickly mention, still very briefly playing Pillars of Eternity. That game continues to impress me. I love old school RPGs. I yearn for another actual Dragon Age like the first one, not the two sequels, which were fine games. They were fine games, but they were not Dragon Age Origins. They did not have that. You know, I always say this. It didn't have that soul. It didn't have that heart that Dragon Age Origins did. But Pillars of Eternity has just really impressed me, especially if you're an old school RPG player. Here's a story as old as time, Cameron. Sega does a thing better than Nintendo and with better value, and it completely commercially underperforms, and they don't get nearly the credit they deserve. Am I talking about the Sega Genesis?
Sega Dreamcast.
Am I talking about the Sega CD? Am I talking about the Dreamcast? I don't know. It could be any of them. In this case, I'm talking about the Genesis Mini. It is so much better than any of the Nintendo Mini consoles in terms of, like, it's got like double the games that a Nintendo Mini console has.
Okay, okay. If you're going to be throwing shade on my SNES Classic, we're going back to the old school console wars, all right?
Oh, yeah,
Sega fanboy. Let's do this.
Let's do this. And by the way, of all the Minis, I think to this point, the Super Nintendo Mini has been the best one, for the record. The NES Mini, I think, was a little shallow.
Mm-hmm.
And the PlayStation Mini, like, just needs to come with a thing that just says, you must hack this to enjoy it. And I think you should probably, if I'm being really, really, really honest with anybody, you should probably hack all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just no if you look at their rationale or the resources that are out there for you, if you spend an afternoon, you can really improve these things. So, you know, you should probably just go to town. You're only going to be out like $50 if you break it, and you're not going to, because these are all kind of very
flash
safe
memory.
Ways of money. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so I haven't done anything outside of the factory settings for the Genesis Mini, but the save states, Cameron, you can return to the main menu through the controller.
It's great.
Game over there, right? Like, all the other ones, you have to get up and you have to hit the reset button. The controller cable is long enough for you to sit in a recliner and play the game. I know, this is nuts, right? First of all, the modeling, so this is a Model 1 Genesis, for those of you who know what that is, and the volume knob doesn't work, but it actually moves like it did on the original Genesis.
Okay.
They have a removable expansion port where you should be able to plug in a Sega CD, but there's not, right? Like, it's just something that they just added as a removable piece of plastic like they did in the original. The cartridge slot actually opens and closes. So the attention to detail is just really spot on. The options, by the way, can we just say this? Who are these people that want scan lines? Every time you go to the graphical settings, there are the like scan line options.
Like the old RTC televisions, yeah.
Yeah. I think those always look awful and nothing like they used to, right? But the game library is exceptional, just exceptional. Right away, you get Phantasy Star 4, Shining Force 1, Shinobi 3. That should pretty much be all you need. Yes, there are the Sonic the Hedgehog games. The only problem is, and this has plagued everything, is the lag is more noticeable than the original consoles. So if you've ever played, like if you've recently played one of the original ones, and the NES and SNES do this too. And there's also a slight sound lag. And it was only noticeable to me in Mega Man. Because, you know, whenever you shoot his gun, like there's that really recognizable sound and it kind of comes a little bit later. but just a wonderful library, and just the setup itself is just, there's been so much more care put into it than everybody else's mini console. I know, Cameron, you're just saying you're a Sega fanboy, but I think it's great.
You know what? Right? I'm saying both. I think it's probably a great system, and you are a Sega fanboy.
Yeah. I mean, yes, to that, I popped it in. I went right to Streets of Rage 2, the soundtrack in the settings, played the finale song, and just played it through my sound system at full blast for like 5 minutes.
Good.
One thing that is inarguable of all the 16-bit systems, Sega had the soundtracks on lock, man.
They were good. Yeah.
Legendary stuff. Anyway, Cameron, in case you're wondering, I've not seen the Sonic the Hedgehog film, though. I don't know if you've taken that one in yet.
You might take your son to that, right?
That would be very much of a him thing, yes, yeah. For sure. Anyway, so nice kind of short show. We almost made it within 30 minutes, which was the original mission statement for the show, to have a 30-minute episode every week.
Finally.
So, yeah, we got there. All right, Cameron, if someone would like to get a hold of you and tell you that they want 10 more minutes, where could they find you?
Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.